inspire, educate, connect. This is Yoga Digest, a vibrant community of passionate changemakers.
I'm Jen Bodner, and you're listening to Yoga Digest Now. We feature real people and real stories. Yoga Digest is your resource for inspiration, health, and well-being. Wake up to the now with tips from the experts on being the best you, achieving your goals, and finding balance for your mind, body, and soul. The time for living life fully is now. Hello, everybody, and thank you so much for listening to the Yoga Digest Now podcast. I'm super excited and super nervous again to talk to somebody who I truly admire for multiple reasons and somebody I have felt connected to a very long time. MC Yogi, welcome, and thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thanks so much for having me. Don't be nervous.
Thank you.
I appreciate you following me.
No, I honestly, I can say, gosh, it must have been 7 years ago or more that I used to be a really competitive athlete, and I ran all the time. And sometimes I would just get burnt out on my hardcore rock, and I would throw in, I guess it was your first album, you know, the one with like Elephant Power and all that stuff on it. And I would literally just listen to the whole thing, and it would be like a really meditative run, you know. So I was using your
that's awesome.
music to run to and stuff long ago. But I want to share something with you because I've been, of course, researching and, you know, reading your book and listening to your interviews. And I heard you say something in one of your interviews about the saying by Gandhi, to be the change you wish to see in the world. And you said it almost has become like a statement, like a bumper sticker now. And I'm not gonna lie, I have a wooden plaque in my bathroom that a friend made for me that says that, you know, be the change you wish to see. She's not a yogi at all. Who made it for me? She just is a crafty person. But I have to tell you, did you see the picture that I sent you from Wanderlust Squaw Valley in 2013? Did that happen to come through?
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure if I got that.
Okay, I sent it here through the interview feed, but you'll have to take a look at it because it's a picture that you took after I think it was called your Beastie Flow class that you did with DJ Drez down in the big tent. And I got there.
Yeah, I do. I see that photo there.
You see? Okay. So that day like significantly changed my life. And this is the reason why. I was running late because my class before was way up on the mountain, and I had to ride the ski lift down and all this stuff. And I got there and could barely fit into the tent. And you said, those of you who, you know, are stuck out in the grass, why don't y'all come up? There's a lot of room right up front. We got room up on the stage. So I grabbed my mat, rolled it up, and I was like, what the heck? And I went right up on stage, and I was right next to you and DJ Drez for that Beastie Flow. And I felt like I was like a backup dancer in a way, but I was doing my yoga, and it was really just the most spiritual awakening. That whole event just really changed me and impacted me and has a lot to do with my choice to follow my path into creating Yoga Digest. So it really opened me up. So thank you, because if you think
that's so cool.
Yeah. If you think you're not being that change you wish to see in the world, I just wanted to let you know that you are. You're making a difference just by being yourself. So thank you.
Oh, I appreciate that. I'm glad you can make it to the class.
Yeah. It was awesome. So you are pretty much a pioneer in this space, I think, of being a yoga musician. And more specifically, and especially a hip hop yoga musician. And some really traditional practitioners might argue that music there's not a place for music in yoga. And I'm not one of them, just to be clear. But I just want to hear you speak to that.
I think you should be able to practice yoga without anything, without music, without a mat, without expensive clothing. I mean, ultimately, you should be able to, like, do your practice just by breathing, meditating, knowing the postures. So for me, like, the music is sort of like the soundtrack, and that started to come together later. But in the beginning, when I first started doing my practice, it was just, you know, I would go into the room and do Ashtanga yoga, and there was no music at the time. And it wasn't until I started practicing yoga in New York with Sharon Gannon and David Life at Jiva Mukti that I started to hear this music they were playing in the class, and it kind of blew my mind, because the way that they would play music in class was like a mixtape. It was just all this incredible music, and it wasn't just music, but it was also like talks, you know, people like Alan Watts and these great philosophy excerpts. And when I heard that, I was like, it just really kind of struck me and inspired me that that you can have music, and I don't know, that kind of shifted my perception and kind of opened me up to, you know, to creating music that would sort of help to become like a soundtrack to the experience.
You've been known to say that music and yoga are kind of the same in terms of expression. What do you mean by that?
Well, yoga, there's something about like when I've been practicing yoga for a little while. Like I started when I was 17 years old, and I was living in a group home at the time, and I was getting into a lot of trouble. I was kind of a juvenile delinquent, and music was always like a really good outlet for me to take all that energy that I was dealing with and felt pent up, and then was able to express it when I'd go and perform, or we'd go and break dance, or, you know, the music was just felt like a healthy outlet. And then when I started doing yoga was another sort of method or way to take all the energy of my mind and all the stuff I was dealing with in my body, and being able to kind of harness it and channel it in a positive direction. So for me, yoga and music have always been a healthy way to just to kind of express myself and release some of the layers of tension and stress, so that I was less heavy in terms of my presence. I remember my first teacher, Larry, used to say that when he first discovered yoga, he was in Jamaica, and he saw a man practicing yoga on a rock, and he said he was in his 30s, and his whole sort of life, his mind, his body, he was just heavy. He was depressed. He was sort of having a spiritual crisis, didn't know what he wanted to do with his life, and he had this vision of this man practicing yoga on this rock on the edge of the ocean. And then fast forward, you know, 30 years later, he'd been practicing yoga every day for, you know, 20, 30 years. And he realized that physically he was heavier. He had gained more weight in his 50s and 60s. But his presence was so much lighter. He was so much more joyful and happy. And so his realization was sort of like the image of Ganesh, the elephant headed deity of, you know, the yoga tradition. Even though he's really big, there's something about his presence that's really joyful and light. And the more you practice yoga, the lighter you become, and the easier it is to really kind of dance through the world, you know, creating less suffering.
Yeah. And yoga,
something to that effect.
I hear you, because it is just it's an expression, it's a practice, and it was something that you started at, well, actually what you found as an expression, you know, before yoga was your interest in music. It somehow brought you, I feel like, just listening to your story and reading your book, music is actually what kind of led you to yoga. You talked about, I love the fact that you were born on the day that Rapper's Delight was released, by the way. I remember you saying that.
Oh, yeah, same.
In an interview.
Same year. Yeah, 79.
Okay, got you. And you were saying that that your early influencers were performers like Run DMC and the Beastie Boys, that they heavily influenced you. And I just want to know why they made such an impact on you. And I feel honestly made such a huge impact in music in general. That was my era. I'm a few years ahead of you, but really, really changed the world. Why do you, what is it about them that makes them so unique and impactful? Or what is it for you?
Well, I think, you know, hip hop sort of like when Steve Jobs announced the iPod for the first time, you know, whenever there's like a revolutionary sort of shift in the culture and things are made more accessible to the people, it always sort of changes the landscape. And before hip hop, like in order to make music, you had to, you know how to play an instrument. You had to know music theory. You had to study and go to school. And, you know, a lot of working people couldn't really do all those things. Maybe they couldn't afford an instrument. And so when hip hop came out, it was sort of like a huge shift where all you had to be able to do was, you know, create rhymes. And you could use record, basically sampling other people's music, chop it up, make your own sound. And that just kind of changed the game, because now all of a sudden, you know, anyone could start to make music and express themselves without a lot of the obstacles. And, you know, same with computers, like when the iPhone came out or the iPod, or, you know, I remember when I got my first iMac and it was like, whoa, all of a sudden I can design all this stuff myself. You know, we can make movies ourselves and you could take really good photos. Hip hop was like a revolution like that. And so I think that really, it hit me at an early age because it was just sort of rising into the mainstream, and it kind of hit the suburbs in, you know, the mid to late 80s. And that's right when I was sort of getting old enough where I was becoming aware of music and art and film and stuff like that. So it just hit me at that early age. And because I'd always grown up making art and drawing and making cartoons and stuff like that, when I heard hip hop, it was so animated and so bright and so creative and so fun and so fresh.
Yes.
That it just kind of consumed me.
Yes, yes, yes. It was a good, fun time. And you're right. It is around that age where you kind of start choosing your own music. And at that time, I mean, music was really important to kids because we didn't have all the outlets of kids today, you know, where you can hear basically any song anytime you like. You have to kind of sit around and wait. We had to sit around and wait for it back then. So it was huge. It felt like they were speaking right to me anyway. But and you have a lot of talents, and I want to talk about all of them, and one is the art, and then back to the music. You said you kind of got into this in your neighborhood. You were going to meetups where, you know, you would do like slams on each other. It was kind of how you got into rapping. But you said that, I've heard you say that you weren't that good at it when you started. And I just have to know, especially at that age, which it's so hard not to react to the opinions of others, what drove you to keep trying? And what advice do you have for other people who are struggling to make it, and whatever it is, not just music, but people deal with this rejection. So how did you overcome that?
Well, none of us kind of come out of the womb walking and talking. We all have to crawl and figure out how to communicate, express ourselves. So with any of the arts, it's the same. Like, I think sometimes when you're a young person and you just start on a craft or developing a skill, none of us are really good at first. And it just takes time. It takes practice. Yoga teaches about, you know, the importance of repetition, doing something over and over and over again until you become really good at it. And there's a great example of that is my, you know, I grew up as a graffiti artist. I started painting when I was like 13, 14, you know, painting on freight trains and in tunnels and freeways and stuff like that, and getting into trouble with my friends. But later I met my wife, Amanda, and she's also a painter. And she started this graffiti project where she's painting 10,000 Buddhas. Mm-hmm. And she just recently, she's been painting these murals all around the world. And she just recently reached her 10,000th Buddha, and now she's still going. But to me, that was sort of an example of, you know, I watched her. She started, and the first one was cool. And then each time she did it, it just got better and better and better and more colorful and more interesting and, you know, different variations of that same theme. And so the only way you can really get good at something is just by doing it a lot.
Practice
over and over again.
Practice, 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 and all is coming. Yes, I've seen her work on Instagram.
Yeah, practice makes progress.
And it's beautiful. It's very inspiring. Okay, so you've kind of touched on it a couple of times already. And in your new book, Spiritual Graffiti, it's really what I would call a tell-all about your childhood. And so I wanted to see if we could talk a little bit about your childhood today, if that's okay.
Yeah, well, you got an early copy of the book?
I did. Oh, yeah, I've read it. It's amazing.
Cool.
Yeah, I couldn't put it down. And it's just so much relatable.
How long did it take you to read it, Jen?
Two separate times. I think I got it done in about 4 hours. So like 2 hours. I was at the beach. I was at the beach for one of those episodes. So there was a few interruptions with having, you know, to go and look at the scenery and stuff. But I couldn't put it down. It's a binge reader for sure.
The reason I asked is because there's a few people have got the early copy and people have been coming back to me like, dude, I read the book in like 2 days. And I'm like, man, it's like over pages or whatever. And I'm like, yeah. And even Christian Haas, who's another great singer, musician, he's like, yes, dude, I couldn't put this book down. I'm like 2 days and it was done. And I'm like, oh man, that's a good sign.
It is. No. And it was the same way. I mean, I felt like it was like, I don't watch Netflix, but I heard about people who do the Netflix binging. That was me with the book. I was like, okay, wait, I got to get back to this. Cause everything's kind of a cliffhanger, but everything is so interesting. And you were really vulnerable in this book, I feel. Really, I mean, you are sharing openly a lot of things and you know, how it started with your family kind of falling apart. You described that you had kind of this almost cookie cutter family, very traditional Catholic family, and then parents got divorced and there was just a downward spiral. So can you just tell us a little bit about 14-year-old MC Yogi?
Yeah, well, so, yeah, I think I grew up in like a typical, you know, American family. You know, I came from a good family, hardworking, working class family, and surrounded by lots of cousins, uncles and aunts, and really super grateful, you know, to my parents. And, you know, I'm the oldest of three kids. I have a younger sister and a younger brother. And mm-hmm. My brother also really deeply entrenched in hip hop. He's a well-known DJ on the West Coast. And so we grew up just, you know, late 80s through the 90s. Everything was cool. And then a lot of stuff just started to change and shift. And it sort of propelled me down, I guess you'd say, like a dark path. I ended up, you know, getting kicked out of every school I went to. And you know, I got mixed up with, you know, drugs and guns and gangs and just dumb stuff that when you're a teenager, it's easy to get kind of caught up in that world of sort of trouble. And so, yeah, things were spiraling. And a lot of my friends were really sort of not finding their way out of it. Like, you know, I have friends who committed suicide and some friends went off to war, joined the military. Some friends overdosed on drugs. Some friends got really deep into dealing drugs and ended up, you know, being sort of pursued by the FBI. And
oh my gosh.
And to jail. Friends went to juvenile hall. I mean, it just, you know, all that stuff was going on. And then I ended up sort of in a group home for about 2.5 years. And then I found yoga, and yoga was like sort of like in the beginning, it was just like a small spark. It was like a little glimpse of another way of being in the world, like an alternative path. And I found it thanks to my dad and the story about how I came to yoga. This book is all about sort of the power of music, the power of yoga, and the power of love, because it's a love story, and it's all about how I fell in love with yoga, fell in love with my wife, how I found my practice and my path. And really, I think the reason why I love this book so much is because it's really the story of my teachers and the people who really guided me and mentored me, and the wisdom and the teachings that they gave me, which really turned my life around. And if it weren't for those people, I honestly don't think that I would be alive or be here. So
that's amazing. Reason,
why I was so excited to share this book with the world is not to tell my story, because I don't think my story is all that like different than most people's, but what's extraordinary is the people in my life who sort of guided me deeper into my practice. Like, for instance, like my first teacher, Larry, who he's no longer sort of in his body, he passed away, and he would teach yoga. He used to travel and tour with the Grateful Dead and teach yoga to the Grateful Dead, and he was just like a real wild sort of mystical yogi, and he was fun and free and unpredictable, and he was like kind of psychic and intuitive, and he would just say things out of the blue that would just kind of like shock you and realign you. And
where
was
this?
Like lightning being around him. And
you're from San Francisco.
I was living at his. Yeah, I was born in San Francisco, and when I was studying with Larry, I was living south of Market on Folsom Street in the city at his studio. I was kind of living like a dog sleeping on the floor, and I was kind of his.
Aww.
I was his apprentice, or what you call his gopher, because if he wants something, I'd go for it and go get it, like a coffee or whatever. Like, I was like his little buddy. And then Larry kind of led to meeting other people, and I ended up studying with his teacher, Patabi Joyce, in South India. And,
awesome.
And just all these incredible sort of luminaries and saints and mystics, and, you know, traveling to India, and just all the incredible experiences. And really, I feel like the book is chock full of so many of those stories, but then at the same time, like, I couldn't fit everything into it. So I had to kind of pick and choose the ones I wanted to share, because like so much has happened.
Sure.
So I had to kind of share the ones that were the stepping stones.
Yeah, maybe there'll be a spiritual graffiti part two coming out. But I want to ask you a couple things. I want to back up on a few. Do you remember your first yoga class? I think you said you were what, like 17? So 14 years old.
Yeah.
You were kind of falling apart. You said you were around 17. Do you remember yoga class?
Oh, yeah. There's no way I ever forget. I mean, the first time I practiced yoga was like the first time I saw my wife, or, you know, the first time I heard a rap song, or the first time I painted a mural. Like, those moments, they're just, that's kind of why this idea of spiritual graffiti was such an interesting sort of theme, because, you know, I grew up painting graffiti. I'm an artist, I'm a musician, I'm a poet. And when I wrote this book, I, you know, sometimes in life, your life could be a huge mess. It could be chaotic. It doesn't make sense. But from the perspective of an artist, when you step back, you can kind of start to get a greater picture of the collage of your life, like all the people who left their mark, like all the scratches, all the drips, all the colors, all the textures. And the more I sort of wrote this book and stepped back and looked at it from this greater perspective of really reflecting and being grateful that I made it through all that stuff, I started to see that all these things that happened were a part of this bigger sort of portrait, or this bigger picture or painting. And first time I started practice yoga, it was like, I felt like that's like when I was stretching the canvas, like that's when things really started to like fall into place. Like everything that had happened before that, it gave it purpose, because it all had led me to my practice. And there's an interesting, my wife Amanda talks about this concept of like this Buddhist principle, like when you become enlightened, not to say that I'm enlightened, but when you become awake, you literally rewrite history, because you can see that everything that happened, all the traumas and dramas and pain and stress and all the difficulty and the struggle, like all of a sudden it takes on a whole nother meaning. You see that it was all sort of grist for the mill. It all got you to this place where you could sort of realize, you know, why you're here. And I have this friend that I used to hang out with, and really cool guy. He's a builder, and he does a lot of carpentry and stuff. He's an old timer. I call him an OG. And he used to be, he was a heroin addict. And one time in San Francisco, he got this batch of really bad heroin, and it was going through the city, and a lot of people had died. And he actually died too. He flatlined. He went to the hospital. He was in the emergency room. He was on the bed, and he was pronounced dead. Mm. And when he had crossed over to the other side, he had this vision of this goddess, like a Tara, like this Buddha, who was like around this beautiful lake in this pastoral setting that was kind of like a dreamscape. And he saw this beautiful woman who was just beaming with love and compassion. And he sat with her, and she spoke to him, and she said, "You're not finished here on this earth. Like, you need to go back and turn your suffering into your strength." Mm-hmm. And when he heard that, he felt all this energy rushing back into his body, and his heart started to beat again, and he was revived. And I always remember when he told me that, I was sitting in his trailer, and it flashed on me, because I realized that, like, everything that happened, all the suffering, all the pain, all the stuff I write about in this book, like, it was to make you stronger, you know, to give you those skills, mm-hmm. and to give you that experience so that you could go out and really fulfill your purpose. And that's what this book is all about. It's like finding your purpose.
I love the way that you bring these really traumatic experiences out and are able to create some light around that. Do you, I know you're on the road a lot. You guys are traveling and performing and teaching and sharing. I'm not sure where you call home at this point, but do you ever go back to your old stomping grounds? And have you ever seen or interacted with any of these people from your past, like these teachers or these schools? Just kind of like in a way to, well, for them to see how you've grown and overcome everything.
I was at my old group home just a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, great. Tell me staff, about that. Yes.
Yeah. I had a staff member who was at the group home. His name was Mr. Coberly, and we called him Kobe. And he was one of the most influential people for us growing up. He was like a father figure. Mm-hmm. And he's getting ready to kind of move on and retire and go on to that next thing that he's going to be working on. But he's a real spiritual man, and he does a lot of work with horses and animals. And he was someone who was really kind of pivotal, like pillar for me. And I know a lot of the boys who went to the group home. My brother ended up going to the group home later on as well. And so we went back and celebrated him. A bunch of the boys got together. I sort of reunited with a lot of my old friends who are kind of scattered around the Bay Area, like Oakland and Richmond and San Francisco. And we all got together and kind of toasted him. And it was really cool, man. Like, I really, you never know how much you impact someone's life. Mm-hmm. And so that was a cool opportunity to really just kind of like acknowledge him for, and it wasn't like one big thing he did, but it was just like showing up every day in lots of little ways. I'm really grateful to him.
That's so good to hear. Well, it just kind of takes me into segueing into the next thing I kind of want to talk about. And, you know, reading your book, and you were a rowdy one. I'm not going to lie. You were sneaking out cars and stuff like that. I have three teenage boys. And parenting today is hard. I mean, there are like 1 million more ways to get in trouble now than there were when we were young. And I just want to know what, you know, if you could say anything to our youth right now that's just being so overwhelmed with information and opportunity, what would you say to them? How to handle this?
Well, I just ask the question, like, what's your practice? Like, if you don't have a practice, you're not getting good at something. So you got to decide, like, what do you love? Like, you love music, you love art, you love designing clothes, you love playing sports. Like, you follow the thing you love the most, and then just let that become the anchor or you know, the thing that points you and gives you sort of direction, like that it's your compass. So find what you love and just like commit to that and work on it every day until you become better and better and better. Because we need a practice, like we need a path. We need something that can, something where we can check in with our progress and see, wow, look at how much I've developed in the last 3 months. I didn't know how to use Adobe Illustrator. I didn't know how to use Photoshop or Premiere or Ableton or Serato or, you know, any of these cool programs. Because actually, like living in the digital age, it's actually, there's a lot of benefits and blessings, because if you're a creative person or a writer or whatever you do, there's all this incredible software now that if you just start practicing at it, it can help to really hone and focus your offering to the world. You know, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, these are all outlets to share your work with the world. So there, it's a double-edged sword. Like mm-hmm. all those things could be a distraction mm-hmm. or all those things could be sort of a pipeline in a way, a conduit for you to really share your, you know, your talents with the world.
Well, and it's kind of like you have also said a little bit about when you first got into rapping and hip hop, that it was all about slamming each other, and that the it was really about offending each other, and how you that you just realized that wasn't for you. Yeah, I know. Well, clearly, yes, I I hear it all the time. But it, you know, you can use all this stuff for a positive or a negative. What's that?
Yeah, and that, to be honest, that happens in a subtle way with all of us. So you don't have to be a battle MC to subtly put other people down mm-hmm. to make yourself feel better. I mean, I think it's part of the human condition, because we want, as a defense mechanism, as a type of security, we want to feel better than something else to kind of leverage, you know, how we feel about ourselves. So we create sort of false personalities or, you know, roles, egos, however you want to frame it. And we all do this. I do this, like, you know, and hip hop made me more aware of it. And especially yoga definitely made me way more aware of it. It's like, we don't need to put other people down in order to feel better about ourselves. And so battling, to me, you know, I kind of follow the Buddhist path of, it's better to conquer yourself than to conquer an army of, you know, 10,000 mm-hmm. external people. It's better to have self-control. So that's really what I'm working on. And that's a lifelong practice.
Well, and it comes out, you know, you only love is real, you know, give love. I mean, just you use the word, and I don't even want to say use the word. I just want to say, I hear the word love from you in a lot of different ways. And a lot of people today use this word in a very superficial way. It can even be just an automated response, you know, to say to somebody, I love you too. You know, it can be very rote. And so obviously you are, this is part of your practice, this this unconditional or just love. It doesn't even need a label, right? And so I want to talk a little bit about your relationship, because you and your beautiful wife, Amanda, you guys have been married how long?
We just celebrated our 14-year anniversary, we've been together for about 17 years.
Wow. That is incredible. That is incredible. And it is not easy. And I just want to ask you, like, what is the secret, or just how do you guys make it work? How do you make a relationship last? Because you guys have gone through a lot of ages and stages together, and probably a lot of transformation, as individuals.
Yeah, for sure.
How do you guys make it work?
The main thing, you just be friends first. And that's the thing that sustains everything, is just make each other laugh. You know, my friend Noah Levine, who wrote this incredible book called Dharma Punks, he's got a real similar story to me. And he has these Buddhist refuge recovery centers all around the country. We did an interview together yesterday for this company called Yoga Glow, which I'm going to start to offer some yoga classes on their platform.
Awesome.
And we were doing just hanging out, doing this interview, and he had given this teaching that this Buddhist monk had given. I think it was his teacher's teacher. He was an abbot mm-hmm. in the monastery. And one of the monks had said, you know, Master, you teach non-attachment, but you're clinging to your coffee cup. You look so attached to that cup. And he said, no, he said, see, I realize that this cup is already cracked. It's already dissolved back into the earth. It's already gone. So like that, I can see that everyone that we love has already died and it's gone. Like everything that we see in this world is already broken. It's already left. So what would happen if we approached everyone in our life with that awareness that everything we see is going to get broken and essentially die? It creates this shift in perception and perspective. Like when Noah said that, I was like, I felt the realignment right away. I was like, whoa, like it makes you appreciate the people in your life so much that there's a natural welling up of tenderness and kindness and compassion because you see how precious everybody is. And it just makes you really, you know, value the time you have with them so much more. And I remember I spent a lot of time with my grandparents, and I was actually there at the bedside when both my grandmother and my grandfather died. And actually when my grandfather died, his last breath blew across my face. And I just remember I was closer to them in some ways than anybody else because they helped raise me. And I spent so much time at their house, you know, with my grandpa. I would ride with him, you know, when he would do his deliveries because he used to drive a truck. And, you know, that teaching really has a lot of weight. And I think that's something that Amanda and I share is we just really, you know, appreciate each other and value the time we have together. Because I think we both recognize through our practices how precious time is and how precious it is to be with each other.
That's amazing. And you guys are really, really fortunate. And, you get it. I mean, gosh, you just hit the nail right on the head with the coffee cup story. I'm laughing because my coffee cup is no less than 12 inches away from me, like right now.
Dude, I'm about to take a sip of coffee right now.
And ironically, it's my favorite coffee cup in the world. I don't even know how long I've had it. I'm embarrassed to tell you. And it is chipped and cracked in so many ways.
That's awesome.
And I still love it.
Well, I gotta say, like, I mean, just growing up how I did and the people I know, like I know that everyone, almost everyone, I don't think anyone's immune from knowing someone or having someone in their life or in their family who's affected by drug addiction or alcohol addiction or, you know, especially with the opioid crisis that we're experiencing in America and prescription pills. Like it's such a crisis in our culture that
yes.
People are turning to, you know, these substances. And, you know, over the years, I've had my bouts with substances, and I would definitely recommend to anyone who's looking for relief or wants to, like, you know someone in their life that needs some relief to check out Noah's work. He's doing amazing stuff. He has an incredible book.
And he specializes
about recovery. And he's,
okay. Yeah. I'd like to talk to him.
Yeah, I'll put you in touch with him. He's such a great human being. And
please do.
Against the Stream is the name of his Buddhist community, and also Refuge Recovery is the name of his treatment centers. And they're just helping a lot of people. And I just really appreciate people who do that kind of work.
Same. Yeah. No stranger to that in our parts of the world either. It has a huge effect on a lot of people, and it is overwhelming. So yeah, thank you. I would love, we'll go offline and figure out a way to connect me with him because I would love to get into that space a little bit more. Yoga is really just evolving and it's amazing how the medical field is embracing it as a true legit tool. You know, I can't say treatment because, you know, everybody has their own prescribed remedies,
right.
But it's definitely a great tool and a great resource that can open up and awaken. Like,
well,
you
here's a little food for thought, because this is something where I've been so fascinated and inspired by the yoga tradition. You know, in the old days, you know, like my teacher's teacher, like in India, when you would go to see a yogi would watch how you walk. And based on the sort of gait or the cadence, like the rhythm of how you walk, could prescribe to you certain postures and practices to help you find balance in your life. Because the yogis understood everything based on patterns. Mm-hmm. Everything is based on rhythm and daily routine. And so to me, that's so interesting because, you know, there's a lot of flashy yoga going on right now.
Oh, yes.
With the whole spandex and, you know, Instagram and all that stuff. And, you know, power to anyone who's found a practice and can really, you know, work on themselves through those postures and that breathing. But, you know, it can also become very sort of vain and superficial and kind of showy. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's important to remember the roots of where yoga comes from. And yoga was really designed to be a science and a medicine for not just your body, but also for your mind and for your soul, and to help reconnect you and reunite you with your soul's purpose so that you could really become a light in the world. And so there's a lot of people, we all have different motivations at different phases of our life. You know, when you're younger in the practice, you're really excited. You can do all these cool postures and stuff. And that's important. Like that's, you know, it was like when I was growing up in hip hop, like, you know, that you're competitive, you want to get better, you want to practice, you want to do your thing. But as you get a little older and a little more mature, you realize that the surface level of the practice is only about, you know, 5% of what yoga has to offer.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And what yoga has to offer is like, it is profound. It is life-changing, culture-shifting, planet-saving, family-healing, powerful, powerful medicine. So I'm just grateful to the people who are carrying that, you know, that energy and those teachings into the world.
Right.
Because we need it more than ever.
Absolutely. And sometimes it does take, you know, that little shiny object to just draw more eyes, but you just got to hope that those eyes, you know, eventually get led to the depths, kind of like you're talking about. And I think most people who do it for a while, they figure that out, you know, hey, this isn't just about, you know, looking good in spandex. There's sort of a little something more to this if you continue to delve into it. So I agree with you 100% on that. So I have to ask you about, you know, spiritual graffiti and how it came about. I mean, did you always think you were going to be an author? Is writing a book something you always wanted to do? What prompted you to share this amazing story?
It's actually the opposite is true. Like I'm kind of, and Amanda could tell you more about this, but I'm kind of a reluctant person. Like I never really wanted to be a yoga teacher. Like I never set out to be a yoga teacher. The only reason why I ended up taking the teacher training from my mentor, Larry, was because I wanted to spend more time with him.
Hmm.
And then he kind of like pushed me out to start teaching, and I didn't really want to, I just wanted to practice. And I was, you know, I was super nervous and shy in the beginning. I was really, cause I'm kind of an introvert. Even though I go out and perform at festivals and do big things.
It makes sense.
You know, like, yeah, I'm kind of just a quiet, nerdy person. But but when so when I was approached to write the book, because I wasn't planning on writing a book. I wanted to work on my next record because music is a thing I love working on more than anything else. It's up there with like drawing cartoons and stuff for me. And so when I was approached to write the book, at first I was like, I wasn't sure about it. And then it just started to become clear that the book would be a vehicle and a conduit that I could share the teachings that I was given on along the way. And then also just share my, you know, how I turned my life around with the hopes that maybe, you know, it could encourage and inspire someone else who wanted to, you know, turn things around in their own life and really work to discover their own unique purpose and path. Because what I found in yoga is that the more you meditate, the more you practice yoga, the more you start to attune and harmonize your body and mind with your own unique calling in the world. And I think every single person who exists has this, like, this thing inside of them, because I know I have it in me, that's like pulling at you. And it's like reminding you, you are here for a reason. You need
we need to sit and listen and connect to what that thing is so that mm-hmm. we can go out and do it and feel fulfilled and satisfied. And so that this book is all about, you know, that winding, turning, twisting road of finding your purpose. And it's not a linear straight line. And no one is in such bad shape that they can't turn their life around and discover that purpose for themselves. So to answer your question, I wasn't planning on writing a book. It just kind of happened. Uh-huh. I was approached and then I finally said yes. And then I got to work on it, and it was a real process.
And was it healing for you at all, or did it, for you to kind of just put this out there, how did that affect you?
Just like everything else that I've done, like whether it's like music or art, or performing, like I was not good at first and I didn't know how to do it. So I had to kind of just get in there and figure it out. And as I started to pour all these words onto the page and spill this ink, you know, into the fabric, like it was actually really healing because I got to reflect and look back on my life and see that, wow, I wouldn't have gotten here if it weren't for this person. And this wouldn't have happened if this, you know, bad thing didn't happen. Or look at how this, like this thing that was so difficult at the time, how that caused this chain reaction that sort of sent me in this direction that led to this and that. And you really start to see the constellation of events in your life that are, it's beyond amazing. Like it's kind of miraculous. Like it's hard for me to explain like how I got here. So the book is like the book was like a great map,
yeah,
and like a road and journey that showed like, wow, this is amazing. All that happened so that this could happen. That's crazy. Like, so
well, you were
that
talking,
was very healing.
You were talking about patterns and such, and sometimes it is very good to reflect and sit back. Even people who journal, you know, I always encourage people to journal, if it seems so irrelevant, write it down, and you can come back and share it. I used to journal when my boys were little, and they love for me to read some of the stories because they seem so irrelevant at the time.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, they love it. They laugh.
Well, Harry Potter started, where she was just telling stories to her kids, and then it became this like epic.
Oh my gosh, that is just we were fascinated by that whole story in our family.
Is that amazing?
It is truly amazing, and the creativity and imagination. But I want to just one side off here, because you said something a moment ago that I have been thinking about a lot, and you said that even though you are this performer on the stage, and you call yourself an introvert, and how people might gawk at that and be like, there's no way. You know, I've been going back and forth because a lot of people who are shy are coming forth and talking about how they are such an introvert. And I think people will just automatically assume that you are an extrovert because you talk to people. And I think there's a huge difference between being, you know, compassionate and wanting to heal and help others. And so I just appreciate you saying that you're an introvert, because I think that a lot of us are introverts at some level, but somehow just almost get thrown, like you said, like this book, they kept asking you to write it and you did. And it's coming from a place of compassion. It's coming from a place of love that you share this, not because you want to, you know, broadcast or whatever your life to everybody, but there's a lot of intention behind it. So thank you for pointing that out. I don't think most of us would peg you as an introvert. Just an interesting concept. I've been thinking about a lot.
Well, one thing that really shifted and changed in my life is when I was young, I was really painfully shy, like, you know, excruciatingly shy. Like I was quiet. I always kept to myself. I was always reading comic books or drawing or listening to my sort of Walkman, or, you know, I was not a very athletic person. I was not outgoing. I was not boisterous or loud.
You were into Star Wars.
I love Star Wars, all that. Like, I was just really skinny. I was like a skinny, shy little kid. And something happened around the age of So I started to get in trouble like 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. Like I started to get into a lot of trouble. I had a lot of problems. But when I was 17 and I practiced yoga for the first time, it was almost like someone was cracking the hard shell of a coconut. Something like happened. And I felt myself starting to break open. And that's when all this music started to spill out. And there was a shift. Like it's hard to explain, but it really started after yoga. And really when I started to meditate more too. And Ashtanga yoga was a big part of it. And my teacher,
it's an incredible practice. It's an incredible practice.
It like cracked me open so deep that all of a sudden I started to feel this courage and this confidence and this strength that I never had before. I was always really insecure and unsure about myself. And when I started practicing yoga, getting on the mat, I started to, it's almost like you're doing this experiment on yourself. You're mm-hmm. doing these postures, you're breathing, you're struggling, you're stretching, you're opening, you're connecting. And you start to gain this experience of yourself that you never had before. Mm-hmm. And as the yoga started to work on me, like I found that I was like becoming more myself. I was more confident, more relaxed, more calm. And I was able to like get up on the mic and like perform with more gusto and more energy. And I really think it was because I was practicing yoga that I was able to really step into my, you know, my position, my power, my path, which was, being an artist and a performer. But it was like a gradient, like darkness. And then there was like this shift where things started to lighten. And all of a sudden it was like, whoa, my life is amazing now. Like how did this happen?
Mm.
You know, cause it wasn't always like this.
Right.
I really do believe in the practice.
Yeah. And it shows I have, you know, as I told you, I had my life changing experience at your Beastie Flow class. And, you know, and it wasn't just the fact that you were, you know, rapping and Beastie Boys was interjected, but that you could truly hear the lessons in yoga, the philosophies in yoga, and not just the spiritual message was heard, but also just your language in opening up. I remember you saying something, we were like in an upward facing dog or doing a backbend lift of some kind. And you said, you know, if you are struggling or feeling pain or tension as you open your heart here, you're actually like telling yourself that it's bad to open your heart. So back off a little bit and bring it, you know, into a softer place or something like that. You use this beautiful language. And so you're very powerful, very talented. And, also, you know, in regards to the book, not just is the message and the story so riveting, but there's this amazing artwork all throughout it as well. That is just,
oh, thank you.
Yeah, super entertaining. And that's all your work? Is that some of Amanda's work? Is all your drawings?
No, those are all just like little doodles and my own little drawings that I put at the front of every chapter.
Yeah.
Actually, that was probably the most fun part was to make those.
Super cool. Super cool. Well, okay. I know that as yogis, we are, you know, practicing living in the moment, but I just have to ask you, what is coming up next? What's on the horizon for MC Yogi? What you got going on?
Well, you know, it's been a long time coming and a lot of people have been asking me for probably like the past, gosh, I don't know, 5 to 7 years. They're saying, when can you please do some yoga classes online? Because we want to be able to practice with you.
Yes.
And I've been kind of putting it off and resisting it. And fortunately, I feel really grateful to this company, Yoga Glow, because they approached me and they're like, hey, we would really love for you to offer some yoga classes on our app, on our platform. So just in the last week, actually, I went down to their offices and met with the company. Everyone there is super cool. It was like a family.
Yeah.
Started by two brothers. And I really just love everyone who works there. And a lot of my friends teach on that platform. Really amazing teachers like Richard Freeman and Rod Stryker and mm-hmm. Elena Brower, Catherine Budig's on there. There's like so many good, inspiring teachers on there that I just felt like it was a huge honor that they asked me to come and offer something. So we filmed a couple days, and I put together this program of yoga classes. They're, so the program is called Spiritual Graffiti. So it was inspired by the book, and there's 6 30-minute classes. So I wanted to just teach some really quick classes for people who don't have a lot of time during the day, and maybe they just want to like step into a practice that's strong and inspiring and fun, but it's not going to be so time consuming that they can't do it on a regular basis.
Awesome.
So that's what's coming up, and I'm really excited about that. I really like Yoga Glow. They have a lot of integrity. And then the book's coming out September 19th.
Yeah.
And what else we got cooking? We got some working on some new music. Some new videos.
Awesome.
Yeah, just a lot of fun stuff. A lot of touring. We're going to be touring across the country. I think we're doing 30 cities this fall to promote the book, which is all on mcyogi.com. And I've been posting it on my Instagram. A lot of fun stuff, man. And great. I'm just super grateful, and I feel so blessed, dude, to be doing yoga, music, and art.
Yeah, well, you're doing it, and you're doing it well. And we hope to, I hope that we get to see you again. I've seen you perform twice, once in Squaw Valley and once in Austin, Texas. You need to come back to Texas. Yoga Digest is doing festivals now, and maybe we'll see you at one of our festivals one of these days. But until then...
Can I just send just like so much love to Houston and everybody in Texas and Louisiana affected by Hurricane Harvey, because that is real. And man, I've been seeing some images and hearing from people and friends, and man, there's so much tumultuous energy and change going on in our country. And I just want to send so much love to everybody down south, and just want you to know we're thinking of you.
Thank you. We appreciate it. It is a little tense down here right now, so that is much appreciated. And I just want to thank you so much for carving out some time for Yoga Digest today. MC Yogi, much love to you and Amanda and all your efforts. Keep killing it.
We're healing it.
All right. Thank you.
Right on, Jen. I appreciate you. Have a great day. Much love.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Peace.